Before I go to my next guest, I have to clarify a couple of things. I want to go back to some of the comments that have come into us today, because some of them I can't deal with that one now because that's private. Nursing homes are dealt with from there. Keith, why don't they use the word pledge and specify the use of the titles of people who care for people in the home? For example, married mothers, fathers, carers in the home, same-sex couples, carers, etc. in the home. The words strive and endeavour is not the same as pledge. That's why people don't trust this change. It smells of a ghetto clause for the government. I don't understand why people can't see it. It's really not that difficult. So you tell me how you're going to vote from there. I thought we clarified that from there. Another caller said, why are the government not clarifying the terms of the proposed changes? Why is everyone assuming that they know what they're gaining by voting yes, yes? It seems to me that yes, yes voters are happy to accept the crumbs from the table. Wouldn't it be better to vote no, no now and redo it correctly from the outset so that we all know what's at stake? If the yes vote goes through, it will be the courts will be hopping for years to come with cases. And that's not the case either. Anyway, Keith, if the state is a caring state, our hospitals wouldn't be in such terrible way. If animals were being treated in such a way in the veterinary building, like people of all ages have been left in A&E across the country, the veterinary building would be shut down. Again, it's grossly incorrect. There's a lot of good care being given as well. And I'm not defending the government, I am really not. But I can't deal with misinformation either. If the government recommends a yes vote, that everyone should vote no, as they can't be trusted and are usually wrong. I know I'll be a no vote today. And the person, by the way, who sent in something today, I have to find it there. And the person, by the way, sent in some kind of text earlier to say, what's the point in sending in texts when you won't read them out? But she didn't send in a text. And have you never sent in a text? So why would you send in a stupid text like, hi Keith, what's the point in sending in a text when you won't read them out? But you didn't read them out. You didn't send them in for me to read them out. Breathe, Keith, altogether. Keith, the lady makes complete and utter sense. The people were elected in Dáil Éireann by people for the people. The government has to be gotten rid of. They're wasting taxpayers' money. So that's not about the referendum. That's about the government and lack of confidence in the government. But why don't you do what's right? You decide yes, no. That's what you need to do. You have to decide it. We're trying to, we're like the banana today, trying to take the skin off it and open it out and give it to you. Keith, I'm a carer for 38 years for my son. Last year, my husband had a stroke and I'm also caring for him. I had a hip replacement in January. I applied for a home care package for 6 weeks while I recovered and they would not give it to me. The system, again. Really and truly, the system needs to be really looked at from there. Keep those texts coming into us, please, today. And keep them coming into us on 091-770-0077. And you can also WhatsApp us into 086-3833-553 if you want to get through to us. Now, I was coming back from Tuam last night. And you want to see the sky, the darkness of the sky. No, the light's on in the car. I was driving sensibly and safely, so I was. But once I got home, the sky was just alive. And I loved the sky. And I love looking at the stars. And I love all that goes into it. But Dr. Christian Jinsky, indeed, is a lecturer in the University of Galway and lead author of one of three new papers published. And it's about space research. And it sheds new light on the formation of planets. And he joins me on the line today. Dr. Christian, good morning to you. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you for having us.
No problem. I love looking at the sky, and I just love what I see, and I love just it's beautiful. We're privileged to live in the west coast of Ireland and a clear night that we can see it. But talk to me about the formation of planets and how have you gotten this research together?
So the formation of planets that happens around young stars. There's this huge clouds of gas and dust that are basically formed in a disk around those stars, and in there the planets are forming by slowly sticking dust particles together. The dust is more almost like sand on the beach that you can imagine there. And what we did now was we used one of the largest telescopes we have on Earth right now. It's located in Chile in South America.
Yeah.
And we observed those disks around 86 of those young stars because we wanted to understand how these early phases of planet formation work.
And can I ask you just how long then would it take for a planet to form, taking in those dust particles?
Oh, that is on timescales of about 1 million years or more.
Oh, so I don't have to worry.
It's a really long process.
I don't have to worry about it then, Christian.
No, certainly not.
Wow. And it takes that long to form a planet?
Actually, it might even take a little longer. We are not quite sure yet on the exact timescales, but that is one of the things we're trying to figure out.
And through all of this then, and the wonderful people in Chile that have this massive observatory indeed, can you also tell whether there's life on planets, or is that another research that you can do?
Well, we are trying ultimately to answer the question, how did we come about, right? Because how did we come about, that is connected to how often does something like our own solar system form.
Yeah.
So by understanding how planets are forming, we are trying to get an idea of how often is something like the solar system out there, and then ultimately how often life is out there. Right now, there's an entire field of astronomy unrelated to our research now that is dedicated to figure out how we can tell if there is life on distant planets. I don't think we are quite there yet, but there's some stuff that we are trying, that we are having in the works, where people that are sometimes much smarter than me trying to figure out how we can tell this from many of the planets that we are looking at.
There's not too many fellas now smarter than you, so there isn't out there. Can I ask you though, just in relation to, it's highly unlikely that there isn't life on some of the other planets, that we on Earth were the only ones to be lucky enough to be where we are.
Well, look, what we have learned already is that any star that you're looking up on the night sky almost certainly has a planet. Planet formation happens all the time and everywhere. It would be crazy to think that among all of these planets, the solar system is a once-off. We have billions of stars in the galaxy. So I tend to think something is out there somewhere. But, it's on us to prove this, right? And to figure out if we can find it.
And can I ask you, just in relation to the research that you've done, I mean, how long has this research taken?
So it's typically on the order of a year or two between the observations and getting the articles published. So it's in these three articles. Yeah, we worked about 2 years that we worked on those.
Mm. And just in relation to, where can they get further information on the research that I'm talking to you about?
So I have a webpage myself, christian-ginski.com. So there's a bunch of stuff on my own research written there. And then there's a beautiful press release by the ESO, the European Southern Observatory. And they're really, really good in explaining stuff in also a bit more layman's terms so that everyone can understand. Also, if you're really, really interested, or if any of your listeners are really interested in studying this stuff, we actually have our undergraduate open day on Saturday this week. So that would be also an opportunity to come and talk to us at the physics stand.
Wow. And that's on the University of Galway?
Yes, that's at the University of Galway.
University of Galway. And do you know what time it's on from? I know you're under time pressure.
I believe it starts at 10 o'clock in the morning, the open day.
Yeah.
There's a whole program on our website if your listeners are interested.
Just go to University of Galway and get further details from there.
Yes, exactly.
If you want to get details, so your name is spelled Christian-Ginski. I'm sure you've had great fun with your surname, so you have.
Yes.
But thank you for joining us today on the program. And again, continued success to you. That space research is on those websites, and go to University of Galway and get further details as well. Fascinating stuff. And looking up at the sky last night, I have to say, was just wonderful. Just to see how many stars there were out there, and just the movement. And you could just see the clouds going in and out of them. Anyway, I'll stop. I promise you I'll stop. Don't be giving out to me.
The Motoring Slot, in association with Colm Quinn BMW Select. The ultimate finance at Colm Quinn. Whatever BMW model you choose, BMW Select has tailored finance available that is just as impressive as your new car. Contact Colm Quinn BMW on 091 753 888.
And Jerry Murphy sits opposite me today. Jerry, morning to you. How are you?
How are you, Keith?
I'm good. I saw it outside your house last night, so I did. The BYD Dolphin, and you're test driving it. I like the look of it, Jer.
Yeah, I mean, it is a special looking car. The whole brand, this is a new brand, obviously, BYD. has come into the country in the last, what, 4 or 5 months. This is their second car, the Dolphin, the smallest of their range so
all
far.
All electric?
All electric, 100% electric. Comes with a different type of battery to your normal lithium-ion battery. Lithium-ion batteries have cobalt in them. This does not have cobalt in it. It's what they call a blade battery, especially produced by the BYD people, who are a huge company in China. Distributed here by Motor Distributors Limited in Dublin. They're the same people that bring Mercedes into the country. So they've been doing their sums over the last while, and they are very, very happy with the way the BYD is working at the moment.
And has the battery...
The battery capacity...
Has it been challenged without the cobalt?
Well, you see, what it is that BYD started off as a battery manufacturing company, and they are manufacturing their own batteries. Not all the car companies who take in batteries are not manufacturing them themselves, although some of them are going that direction or have been going in that direction. So this is well tested. It's just not an issue. The fact that there's no cobalt in it means that there's some mining dislikes to mining cobalt, and these guys are not doing that.
Okay.
They've come up with this concept.
Talk to me about the BYD Dolphin itself. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, it is part of what they're called their ocean. They're comparing their cars to the ocean. And a lot of the interior design, etc., is oceanic in its design. It's really, really pretty.
I know,
oh yeah, I mean the door handles are like flippers for dolphins and that sort of thing. So you know, there's a concept there, and you can see what they're trying to.
Is there a smell of fish?
No,
come on, Ger. No, this is artistic talent going to a whole new level here. Go on.
That's what they tell us. But I think the important thing about this is that it's really attractive inside in it. It's a change from anything else we've seen so far. It's really, really nice. A couple of things that I worry about in it, there's too much interaction between the technology and the driver. In other words, every step you take, it is talking to you.
Give me a practical example.
You are now over the speed limit. I mean, you're 3 kilometres over.
Okay, that's safety.
That's safety, but it's constant, and it's sort of, it's happening all of the time.
But you can turn it off, I take it?
You can turn it down, from what I can gather so far. You can actually turn down the sound so that you don't hear it anymore. But, it just gets in your head a little bit, and it's too interactive. No problem at all with a car.
It's an age thing, Jerry, between you and I. Like,
well, I just hope it's not just another distraction to drivers, which is a whole different subject.
I think that would drive me absolutely flipping
nuts. It could.
Yeah.
No, I only have it since yesterday, so I'll do an awful lot of playing with it over the next couple of days.
It's a lovely look. It has a kind of a golfy look to it. So
yeah, well, it's smaller than a Golf. It's about the same size as Fiesta, sort of that kind of size. Mm. But it feels airy inside it. There's a nice proportion of
glass.
And
on the road?
On the road, it's like every other electric car you get. It's solid. It's slightly heavy. Not in the steering or not in its handling, but there's weight there.
Mm. Price-wise?
Well, price-wise, starting at 27,818, which is not bad for an electric car. And it goes up through the ranks, depends on what you buy. It claims to do a range of 426 kilometres. I picked it up yesterday, and there was 386 on it. I gave it a squirt of charge in Kinnegad on the way down because I was going in for a cup of coffee anyway. And I brought it all the way home to Tuam, which is 220 kilometres. And in here today, and I have about 80 kilometres left in the range. So that
you have enough to bring you home?
Oh, I have enough to bring me home. There's no problem with that. But that's not sort of... I did half the route on... the old route and half the route on motorway conditions.
Okay.
So that'll tell you. But anyway, it's a really nice car.
And
you've got to get round the the newness of the name and of the of the car.
And who's the dealer in Galway?
Now, we don't have a dealer yet in Galway. I'm told it's imminent, but I think there's a little bit of investigation to do because Lions of Limerick have taken on the car, the brand in Limerick, and of course Lions of Galway are also here. So I suggest if you're interested, I'm sure the boys in Lions of Galway would put you in contact with somebody in Lions of Limerick.
Can you ask Jerry to do a test with four people in an electric car and see the mileage difference between different weight factors?
The weight factor is a factor, without question. Mm. All of the additional things that puts strain on the battery itself. I've done it with vans, for example. And if you have a van and you put half a ton of weight into the cargo, it absolutely gobbles it up. And it will do it for electric cars as well.
Okay. We're staying with the electric cars, by the way, but a sharp drop in sales of electric cars. And I'm really not surprised because the price, except for that BYD 27818, the prices are very high.
Well, I think it's more to do with some other things. Availability of the infrastructure is certainly questionable.
Yeah,
it has been an issue for people all along. People who have were early adopters and bought electric cars, some of them are not going back a second time for an electric car. Now, it also creates a problem for dealers in that the second-hand price of electric cars is very, very low. They do not hold their value at the moment, just simply because there's very few people in the marketplace to buy second-hand electric cars. Mm-hmm. You'll always get these early people that will buy new and then go on, but when they trade them back in, the dealers have them, but they don't have a marketplace or a market for them at the moment. The figures are substantial because new registrations for electric vehicles in February, just gone, 1,866 new electric cars are registered. That's 15.5% lower than February 2023. And so far this year, there's been nearly 6,000 electric vehicles sold, and they're only up by 1.4% in a marketplace that's up by 25%. The total car market has increased in the first 2 months, in February of this year, actually, by 25%.
Okay.
So the whole year only up 1.4%, but the figure in February is, I think, is going to raise a few problems for dealers in particular. Mm. It's an issue. Mm. There'll be certain attempts to sort of dismiss it as it is the same in every other marketplace in Europe at the moment, which it is. And as soon as the car companies start figuring out that this that the electrics may not be as popular as their original cars, I think there's going to be some kickback from the industry towards all governments.
Okay. I was on the road the weekend and I had a tight time scale. Mm. So in total I did 630 kilometres.
Mm.
And I was getting about 18 kilometres per litre.
You were pushing it on then.
Yeah, how do you mean?
Well, 18 kilometres per 100 litres of diesel.
Of petrol.
Petrol, yeah, okay.
But, to be honest, if I had an electric car, which I don't have, and I won't be able to afford anything in my lifetime, I don't know what I've had the time. I hadn't the time to pull in and recharge like
exactly.
that. So I was talking to
an old friend of mine who is in the motor industry as a young fella, because his dad was heavily involved, and we were discussing electric cars and whether or not it would be better to have an ordinary aspirated car.
What's that mean?
Just a petrol or a diesel.
Yeah.
The discussion was around people having to change their driving styles by going from their current petrol or diesel, be it automatic or manual, and getting into an electric car and having to change their habits. It's not a problem. You get over that. But the time factor, when I often say here on the motorway, it gobbles up the electric. If I'm going or coming from Dublin, which is the best example I can give, if I have to stop for 45 minutes and go via the old road
to get a charger
and have to charge it for 45 minutes. The time I would lose on the old road versus the time that I would gain on the motorway is about the 45 minutes.
The smart car is back.
Yeah, believe it or not, it's 25 years since we saw the first smart car, which was produced by Mercedes-Benz in conjunction with Swatch watches.
That's right.
You remember that time?
Yeah.
Well, it's gone a whole new circle now because it's back. It's bigger. It's all electric.
It is a
joint venture between Daimler, Mercedes-Benz, and Geely, the Chinese car company. There are four versions of it, starting at 479 euro for the basic pro version. And there's a price rise up to 41,000, 48,000, and at the top of the range, 54,000. Not unlike what's sitting out there in comparison to design-wise.
It's not like the old smart car.
This has full Mercedes quality.
This is very smart.
It is very, very smart. It was only launched late last week. We had our first drive in them in the Pro Plus version. Found it to be very, very sturdy, very interesting. And look out for it. It will be with Mercedes dealers around the country.
New alternative for diesel fuel?
Yeah, this is a very quick one. Monday we were in Dublin at the launch by Skoda of a partnership with a company called Certa. And Certa are the people that have the filling stations around the country, many of which are self-services. I think they have 41% of their service stations are self-service. But they're now bringing in a new version of oil from Scandinavia, which is an oil based on regeneration from wasted cooking oils and added cooking materials and raw materials to it. And the whole thing brings up what they call a hydro-treated vegetable oil, HVO, now available in some of Certa's filling stations.
And it works in diesel cars?
Exactly. That's the real point.
I know Sweeney Oil have been doing something like that out here for years.
They operate exactly the same as diesel. It's slightly more expensive, but it reduces your CO2 output by 90% or up to 90%.
Wow.
Now, it's only suitable to Skoda tell us in their cars from the midpoint of 2010 until now. The way you spot it in a filling station is the cap on the pump will be pink.
Wow.
You know the way diesel is black and petrol is green. This will be pink. And if people are conscious of, an awful lot of fleet operators of trucks, etc., are now using it. There is a future, but it's only an interim fuel. It'll only be as good as there are diesel cars around the place. But it causes no problem to your diesel. It operates exactly the same way. And it's an alternative for people out there if they just want to be conscious of the green issues.
All right, enjoy your BYD and BYD, and enjoy it and behave yourself in it.
Yeah, and BYD stands for Build Your Dreams.
Go build them, so.
The Motoring Slot, in association with Colm Quinn BMW Select. The ultimate finance at Colm Quinn. Whatever BMW model you choose, BMW Select has tailored finance available that is just as impressive as your new car. Contact Colm Quinn BMW on 091 753 888.
Good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. Urban Schrott of Esset Ireland, he's communications manager with them, joins me on the programme this morning. And again, things that we should avoid posting on social media and why. And Urban has 10 things that we should avoid posting on social media. And he joins me on the line today. Urban, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today. Social media, it's an animal out there that needs to be controlled, but you've taken the 10 top things that one should do.
Yeah, well, you have to realize that, you know, anything that we use online, it can be used for good, there's also people that can use it for nefarious purposes. And with cyber criminals, that's the case. And their main goal is basically trying to get to our wallets. Eventually, they always, everything they do eventually leads to them getting to our wallets, getting to our finances, something like that. So anything that we post on social media, if it can end up being used for these purposes, we should be mindful for. So starting with personally identifiable information, if they can gather info on you, where you live, what you do, what your name is, what the names of your friends are, they can tailor make a scam just for you. So you receive an email which refers to your personal data. So they know your name and they refer to you by name. They can pretend they can be from various institutions, organizations. They can use your address to convince you. So, the more convincing the scam is, the more likely you're going to fall for it.
So
you should be careful not to provide them with anything that can be used against you. Another point is travel plans or location data. So if you're posting on social media when you're on holiday, where you're on holiday, when you're planning to go on holiday, or any other location data, such as where you're going for a picnic or just a day trip, or where you're traveling on business. So as soon as you let them know that you're not in your usual place of residence, this is a clear message that, someone that might want to take advantage of that they can do that, because your place of residence might be empty then. Another thing is making expensive purchases or anything like that. If you're posting that, again, you're advertising to potential criminals that, there's something there worthy looking into. So that might be a thing you'd want to avoid. Any sort of financial details, like years ago, when first customized credit cards came out, where people could put their own photos on them, or graphic designs, people tended to take a picture of their credit card and then post it on social media just to show their friends what photo they chose. Not a very wise thing to do. So any of these things, that could expose you and let them get to your finances, no good.
And Urban, it's the simple things like that, by posting and leaving your property vulnerable. Where do you stand, or what would you recommend when it comes to children and photographs of children and parents posting photographs of children?
Well, that's another thing that's not always recommended. One of the more scary aspects of this is the potential online predators, groomers, and so on that might be preying on such things. And again, you wouldn't want to advertise your children to them by posting your pictures. But another aspect of this is that your own children, once they grow up, might resent the fact that without their explicit consent that you posted their baby pictures there, any kind of silly pictures of children. And they say, I never allowed you to do that. So now they might end up being embarrassed by that when they're a little older, when they become teenagers, and their friends might find their childhood pictures there and tease them over them. So again, it's one thing if you share them with friends and family in a secure manner, but if you just publicly post them on your social media, that might have effects that you wouldn't want.
It's all very common sense that we're talking about today, Urban Schrott of SZ Ireland, communications manager. It's all common sense, but sometimes common sense does not prevail.
Well, people are creatures of emotion and impulse. So very often we do things just because they feel right at the moment, or we think it's a good thing, and we don't really think of the consequences. Mm. So we're not trying, at Ireland, we're a cybersecurity company. So basically all day long we're encountering cybercrime and bad things happening. So, in this way, we might have a little bit of a bias that there's bad things happening on the internet, but we're not trying to scare people. Social media is an interesting place. It has in many ways enriched our lives and given people social connections or a social life which they might not have otherwise, or even replaced some traditional ways of socializing. What we're saying is that it's good to be mindful what you're doing. Be mindful of what you're posting when you're posting it. To consider whether you'd be comfortable telling someone sat next to you the same information that you're posting online, you know, to review who you're posting to. You know, are only your friends reading this, or are your profiles visible to the entire world? To restrict who's able to view what you're posting, and you know, to restrict photo access if it's not absolutely necessary. So just, you know, with a certain level of common sense and just being mindful what you're doing, you are most likely to avoid any kind of the issues that we mentioned earlier.
All right. Urban Trot, Essed, Ireland, thank you indeed for joining us. So what's your website address for further details on this?
Easiest to find us is our blog, which is at blog.esset.ie, so blog.eset.ie. And we have a different story there every day. They're not for technically savvy people. They're, you know, regular people like you and me. They can just read various tips on, on staying safe, child security, business security, any kind of aspects, so they can avoid the most common scams that cyber criminals keep throwing at us.
All right. So it's spelled ESET Ireland, if you want to get further details from there. Urban, thank you for taking our call this morning, and a very good morning to you.
Most welcome. Bye-bye.
Now, very good morning to you. A local councillor indeed has claimed that organisations promoting arts through the Irish language don't fare well when it comes to grants. Councillor John Connolly joins me on the line today. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today on the programme. Just looking at it, because I know at the recent council meeting you debated the annual arts grants, generally a positive story there. But nevertheless, an issue you've raised for the past 2 years that organisations organised in the promotion of the arts through the Irish language don't fare as well. And you've given me the evidence of it here as well. Why is this, can I ask?
Well, I suppose the first thing to say, you're right, and I should say it as well. I think, you know, Galway City Council gave 400,000 euros to different organisations in the city on Monday night, some amateur, some professional, who promote the arts. And I think we're one of the more generous local authorities for doing that. And of course, we benefit greatly from that. The city does, the citizens do. So it's very much welcome development, and it's good expenditure, I feel. There is an issue, though, that has arisen over the past 2 years where the evidence is suggesting that those organisations who are doing promoting the arts through the Irish language are not faring as well. So just to give that data, I suppose, Keith, there were 35 professional groups who applied. 31 of the professional groups were successful.
Yeah.
25 of the professional groups got between 40% and 80% of what they sought. So there was five professional groups then who didn't. And three of those groups consider themselves to be in the category of promoting their work through the Irish language. Branner, Generation Fla, and Antiviarc. And actually, Antiviarc was some distance below that. Antiviarc only received 16% of what they had sought, where, as I said, 25% of the groups, or 25 of the 31 groups, got over 40% of what they sought. So, okay, look, it's a concern for me.
Yeah, when you're talking about the money in question, so Branner, what type of money did Branner get, roughly?
Branner got, well, I can just tell you at the moment that Tiger got 5,000. Branner got 34% of what they requested, and Branner got, to Bruno Keith, no dish, one sec. Branner got 8,000.
8,000.
Which was 34%. They requested 24,000, just over that, and they got 8,000. So it just was a unique feature of it, and I felt it deserved to be highlighted. And the arts officer, in fairness, she didn't disagree, and she felt it wasn't perhaps something that deserved greater scrutiny. I suppose it is important to say, Keith, that there are criteria when these groups are applying, and there is a group put together to assess that criteria. But among the criteria is the promotion of Irish language arts and strengthen the use of the Irish language, commissioning and presenting of existing and new work in the Irish language, visibility of the Irish language as a spoken language across art forms. So I suppose what I'm querying really is, in our assessment, was that relegated? Did it get the priority I feel it deserves? We do, I suppose, credit ourselves much, Keith, for our promotion of the Irish language in the city.
Yeah.
And we do use the title of being a bilingual city. I've heard us, you know, we are oft sometimes described, maybe possibly by ourselves, as the bilingual capital. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I don't see that being reflected in some of the activities that we undertake within the council.
But I mean, if I look at Antiviarc, they're doing my Pudsey Ryan stuff. What were they looking for? About 25,000, and they got 5,000, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Or
yeah,
25. Like,
and again, one of the things that concerns me, I suppose, about it is that there is an annual application process, but it does seem to me that the allocations afforded to groups was very similar to what they were afforded last year. So if you had a low base last year, you know, you seem to get a similar allocation this year, then that may not...
But John, on the other side, though, I'd have to say to you, I mean, the arts officer that you have in Galway City Council is excellent at the job that she does, but there's a finite amount of money as well to be given out.
There is, and I recognise that as well, Keith, but it would be unjust if I didn't highlight that three of the five groups who were outside of what, I suppose, below the 40%, which seemed to be the standard that everybody else got above, three of the five groups were among only six who said they organise their activities or promote the arts through the Irish language.
Okay, no, I appreciate that. So, who got the biggest amount of money, can I ask you?
Well, there were some substantial grants, but I mean, like, Druid got 28,000. Court got 15,000. Mocknes got a substantial grant as well, I think, Keith, 24,000. Galway Music Residency got 28,000. And these are all very worthy allocations, Keith. And I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the arts plays a massive role in the well-being of the city. And I suppose promoting the city as a tourist attraction also. But I do think we need to look at this. And I think we need to be cautious, because sometimes we're possibly not living up to what we claim at times in terms of being the bilingual capital.
No, and I appreciate that. Was GI Galway International Arts Festival, is that a separate allocation that they get, or were they in that?
Oh, no, they were allocated money as well on Monday night, and the figure that they were, they got 46,000. And again, you know, well-deserved, and it'll be put to good use. But I just think that we need to be careful with this, and I think we need to look at it, and we need to make sure that we are doing ourselves justice, and that those groups who promote their activity through the Irish language, I suppose what we should recall about the Taibhiarc is that it is the national theatre for the Irish language. And I should say, Keith, it has been announced this morning, actually, that the Taibhiarc have got substantial grant aid through another source. And that will be announced tomorrow. I think it's on tourist.ie today. It's very welcome over a four-year period. But I would also say that many of the groups with whom the council provided funding on Monday night, they are also, it's possible for them to get funding through other sources as well, and most of them do.
Yeah. I suppose it's very much, for the arts officer in Galway City Council, it's very much loaves and fishes, so it is.
Absolutely. And I think around the table the last night, all councils agreed we would love to be in a position at budget time to increase the resources that we can give for this purpose. It's loaves and fishes when it comes to the council's remit through the budget as well, Keith, in terms of distributing money. There's no doubt about it. The arts officer would love more money. And again, I have to say, in fairness to her, she didn't disagree wholly with my point. And maybe it was, as I said to you a moment ago or two, it was reflective of the position from which the groups were coming from last year in terms of the allocation that they got this year. And maybe that's something that has to be looked at. I think really what has to be looked at is, in terms of the criteria that we are using to assess these applications, are we giving significant and sufficient weighting to the fact that some groups are organising their activities through the Irish language? And I hope we are.
Again, Architecture at the Edge, I know some of the people involved in that, and they got 26% what they looked for. I've never heard of Moth and Butterfly, and I've never heard of Generation Fly as well, so I haven't. But the likes of Branner, I mean, they are Galway, they're quintessentially Galway, so they are. And Taibhiarc is quintessentially Galway as well. But
absolutely. Branner, I mean, Branner are doing significant work in the promotion of the Irish language to young people and to children. And I think that the two you mentioned there, in terms of how well known they are and the work they do, it's just a bit surprising that the grant allocation that they get is not closer to what they seek. But again, I think it's something that we need to be conscious of going forward.
Good Lord, you're a principal, you're a teacher, you know all about figures, so you do. But it's not possible to make a silk. You know, it's to try and keep everybody happy. Look, when you're up against the likes of GIAF, Druid, Cork, Mocknes, like they're the big winners in this, but the money is still small.
It is, but what they got is still somewhat more than what Antivir got.
Absolutely. So that's the question, really and truly. Was it the criteria? Was it the way the applications that went?
Well, I just feel that perhaps in the assessment process, we need to prioritise and we need to give greater weighting to the groups that promote themselves through the Irish language, and simply, Keith, so that we can fulfil how we describe ourselves as the bilingual capital.
Yeah.
Live up to that title, and that we're not just using that title. We don't just use it for a marketing ploy. We don't just use it to promote the city as a tourism destination. That we actually live it out.
Mm. Well, to be honest, the process that the City Council go through and the County Council go through, it's a very robust process, so it is, and it can stand up to any kind of scrutiny. But there is a process there that has to be adhered to, though.
Yeah, but like that process shouldn't be. It shouldn't be that three out of the six professional groups who say they organise their activities through Irish get the smallest quantity in comparison to what they sought. Are that they're some way behind other institutions of similar stature. The Taibhiarc will be 100 years old in 2028. It's synonymous with the city. I think we would be familiar with names like Siobhan McKenna and other founders of the organisation. And look, we must protect it and we must try and make sure that into the future it can do its role, and it can do its role in, I suppose, the promotion of the language as well as the creative arts role it has.
Roisin Dignan was chairperson there for a long number of years, and she put a huge amount of work trying to get extra funding in there, indeed, from Father Griffin Road, and a very talented person herself as well.
The report today, Keith, you know, they, and it's very welcome. Minister O'Donovan has pledged $1 million over the next 4 years of additional funding to the Taibhiarc in recognition of it being our national theatre for the Irish language. But in doing so, like, there has been an admission, and I suppose one of the reasons that the funding has come true is that there has been a recognition that maybe it has been underfunded in the past, and that, you know, it hasn't received sufficient resources to match its title and to match its importance in the city and in the wider region and throughout the country.
All right. Well, I don't disagree with that, to be honest, because, again, you've got household names you've named there, the Druids, Gold International Arts Festival, Corge. You're talking about the Taibhiarc, you're talking about Branner. I mean, we've so many international names, never forget national names here. John Connolly, thank you for joining us today on the programme. Again, do you want to send in a comment? And if you do, you can do so to 086 38 33 55 3. That's 086 38 33 55.3. Now let's head towards the 11 o'clock news and death notices. And yet to come on the rest of the programme, we've got history for you coming up today. We have finance coming up. We're also looking at the International Women's Day lunch, which is taking place in the King's Head on Friday. And much more between now and 12 midday. So stay with us right through until then. Very good morning to you.